Well, I'm sure we missed a lot. Some of it we know about, but what stories do you think we neglected? Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. Every year, news organizations use the week between Christmas and New Year's to look back over the big news of the year. But what stories did we miss entirely or barely touch on? The phone lines are open at 1-800-478-8255, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. Where better to talk about it but on talk radio today on Talk of Alaska, statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. The Alaska Public Radio Network brings you the day's news each weekday evening on Alaska News Nightly, APRN, the voices of Alaska.
So here we are, the last Talk of Alaska of the year, and our one look back at what happened during the past year. It's been such a wild and eventful year, and there are certain events that are, you know, just stand up absolutely enormously, but what else is there besides those things? It's probably no secret to anybody that the news media is suffering economic hard times. Basically, the advertising market has changed. This has caused newspapers to lay huge numbers of people off, and we're basically searching for our compass now to continue to make a difference in the civic process. And you're a part of that. And talk radio has become an increasing part of the civic process. So I'm anxious to hear from you about what was passed up by the MSM, by public radio, by whatever media you you use to get your news. What did they miss? What did we miss? What did the newspaper miss? What did the New York Times miss? However you want to tackle it. But I'm sure there are many issues of importance to Alaska that there are many people out there that feel we haven't done a very good job of tracking. We were certainly late, for instance, in reporting on the permanent fund getting hit by the economic crisis in the nation. Just to point out one of many. My guest today is a rising star of talk radio, Shannon Moore from Homer, Alaska. Shannon.
Hi, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Tell me a little bit about yourself. You've been doing talk radio for a very short period of time, and yet you've already risen to the national ranks.
Well, almost 2 years. I think actually yesterday, I think, was my two-year mark. I, of course, was over at the local progressive station with The Daily Show for about a year and a half, and then I went to FM for a couple of months, and then started reporting for Air America Radio nationally. And then this past week, I guest hosted a national show, a nationally syndicated show on Air America.
And how did that go?
It was a blast.
Really?
I love talk radio. I think it's sort of a public forum that, you know, isn't available a lot of places.
So your slogan, as I recall, is something like, just a gal from Homer painting a red state blue one vote at a time.
Something like that. Yeah, something like that. Just a girl from Homer. Yeah. You know, that actually got me out of that's sort of an old, it's kind of a funny saying. I'm just a girl from Homer got me out of a pretty nasty traffic ticket once.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I totally messed up some sort of, you know, big city traffic rule, and I got pulled over, and the cop's like, "What were you thinking? Good God, you could have killed people." And I said, "I'm just a girl from Homer." And he just looked at me, and he just started laughing, and that was it. That was it. That was the slogan that got me out of some trouble once. And, you know, and it's also sort of a throwback to Saturday Night Live, I'm Just a Caveman. You know, it's like, hey, right, if I'm a caveman, if I can get it, you should be able to get it. So,
well, from your perspective, I mean, so you're in a sense in the, I guess you would call it kind of the loyal opposition. In other words, you know, painting a red state blue would be a reference to being allied to the left wing or the whatever Democrats are these days.
The raging liberal side. Is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's fair. But I have made several discoveries, which is I'm not really painting Alaska, you know, the red state. We, you know, I've made jokes for years about that haven't been a blue state since the Ice Age and these sort of things. But the truth of it is Alaska is very much a blue state. It, our heritage, women had the right to vote here in the 1800s. We had the right to vote, 30 years before women in America. Native Americans had to wait for their rights where Alaska Natives were given their rights. And we've had such a blue heritage. I mean, part of the reason that it took Alaska so long to become a state was, the rest of the senators and people in Washington didn't want another liberal state, and now that I think it's shocking to a lot of people who have come here since the oil days with their, great big, sort of oil hammers and their Bibles. But, Alaska truly is more of a liberal state in the sense that, hey, we don't want people to tell us what to do.
Well, you'll probably get a few old timers calling up to agree with you on that one, and probably some calling up to disagree with you. But what we're looking for is the neglected news stories of the past year. I mean, the biggies, we kind of know a huge lurch in the price of oil, convictions for corruption, the emergence of a bipartisan legislature on both sides, Sarah Palin, of course, being picked to run for vice president with John McCain in the spotlight that put on Alaska. Just some of the really huge events that we saw happening. But what did we miss? What do you think is the biggest one that we missed, Shannon?
Ooh,
Moore?
The biggest one. Well, it's funny. There were quite a few things that just sort of got swept away with the nomination of Sarah Palin. And, certainly the national media vetted her more than – I mean, I think part of the story was that Alaska media never vetted her, ever. I mean, when you look at, certainly the rape kit policy, the forensic rape kits being charged to victims in Wasilla when she was mayor and taking Eric Croft to pass House Bill 270, which was, by the way, passed unanimously, to stop her as mayor because of the sort of moralistic code that she touts. Things like that were known but not ever discussed when she was running. I think that's one of them. But I think that the biggest story that didn't get paid attention to was the Exxon verdict this year. The Exxon verdict coming in, 19 years after the Exxon Valdez oil spill, and that just, 10 cents on the dollar being paid, what that was, what it did to any business. 3 days worth of profit to Exxon being paid 19 years later, and that not being discussed. And then, of course, when Sarah Palin had the national spotlight on her and one of the most watched interviews ever with Katie Couric, and Katie Couric's asking her which of the Supreme Court decisions she disagreed with ever, and all she can think of is Roe v. Wade, even though she was asked, okay, other than Roe v. Wade, and she couldn't think of Baker versus Exxon, where the Alaskan fishermen and so many of our coastal communities really lost out. And I thought that was sad for Alaskans and for Americans that she missed that opportunity.
Well, let's get started on the phone calls if you're ready.
I'm ready. I got my seatbelt on. My okay. Third cup of coffee, thanks to you.
And your lip smacker.
And my lip smacker. You're right.
All right. Let's go to Bill. Joins the program from Fairbanks. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Bill.
Yes, good morning. The biggest story that hadn't been covered is how come Ben Stevens ain't been indicted yet?
The
court testimony, six of his fellow Republican legislators have been indicted, five of them convicted. Wherefore, how come Ben Stevens ain't been indicted yet? I'll hang up and lose your response.
Okay. It's a question that journalists have certainly paid attention to. They just are a little short on answers.
It's kind of hard to be like, and today Ben Stevens still hasn't been arrested, although I know people that have camped out in front of his house. That is something it is puzzling. And, Mary Beth at the FBI, if you're listening, we'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, it is. I think a situation where there's much speculation, and Shannon certainly could speculate, and I could too, but it's probably better to just let the listeners speculate as best they would like to as to why it might be. I mean, one thing might be just the immensity of the charges and the amount of proof that you have put together in order to make what a lawyer calls a case, what a prosecutor calls a case. You want to get everything.
You do. You do. And I think that there are grand juries in several different places looking at Ben Stevens really closely, and it's hard to report on speculation.
Right. Let's go to Tom, joins the program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Tom. What did we miss, Tom?
Morning, Steve. Well, the story you briefly mentioned this morning, I think, has potential to be a real coming issue of the earthquakes in Yellowstone. I've got a list of about 50 of them here. It's not that there's so many of them, but they extend all the way from 7.2 kilometers in the same spot all the way up to the surface at every level in between.
So what is this, a new paradigm in geology or a danger sign? Or what are you telling us, Tom?
Well, I mean, there's been programs about the super volcano going off. There was a movie and a National Geographic program, and geologists have pretty much said several feet of ash all the way to the Mississippi. And although, you know, that's getting to an extinction-level event, you know, it'll obviously cure global warming in a hurry, and above and beyond the billions that would probably not survive due to the reduction in temperature and effect on agriculture. My additional concern is the effect of the ash on all of the nuclear power plants, is that it will quickly chew up all of the cooling water pumps.
Tom, maybe that's next year's news.
Well, I hope we're all around here to look at it. But as far as,
so are you? Do you think you might place this on the Mayan calendar?
I'm not that conspiracy oriented. I'm just looking at the
Mayan
data
conspiracy.
Those earthquakes all the way from 7.2 kilometers at every interval all the way up to the surface, and over 250 of them since Friday. And they're continuing today. So I would hope that you guys would look into it a little bit better, as it's a current, you know, news issue, which could have, you know, obviously worldwide effect.
Wow. Thank you, Tom.
Okie doke.
Wow. What stories are we missing? What stories did we miss in the past year? 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK. Local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. Our guest is Shannon Moore. She's a talk show, talk radio host with our radio station right now.
Right now.
Well, from your point of view in talk radio and doing a show every day, what is it your perception that was driving your listeners crazy that the news media was not reporting on during the past year, if you can just pick one?
Oh, I think there definitely was in the ballot initiatives. I think the sort of the tampering that happened with the ballot initiatives in August, two of them in particular, one, the aerial wolf hunting. The governor's office approved $400,000 to, quote-unquote, educate Alaskans. Everybody got the 27-page glossy, why to shoot wolves and bears out of airplanes manual. It wasn't education. It was propaganda. But there was certainly, and it was like, oh, wow, well, we didn't know that they were going to have this on the, we just wanted to send this out. This has nothing to do with the, so there was that tampering. There was definitely the tampering with, then there was a website that they had, that the state had to take down because it too was propaganda. And the courts decided that. That didn't get covered at all. And then when Sarah Palin came out and, you know, took off her governor's hat as though it were a uniform and said that she would vote against ballot initiative 4, which was the clean water bill to protect the salmon industry.
That was basically having to do with the pebble mine. And
well, it was, but constitutionally, I mean, if we would have had a ballot initiative that said, constitutionally, you can't say this, yes or no on Pebble Mine, I think that it would have been a resounding no. However, you know, when you come in and you say, you know, we're going to spend, what did they spend, almost $10 million to get people to vote no on that. And this was the reason, because it's a redundant law. Who spends $10 million to get a redundant law taken out of the, you know, taken off the books? It's ridiculous. It wasn't already existing. And the fact that there was some real serious tampering with that election, just in public sight, I think was really sort of driving people a little, well, it was driving me crazy, maybe not so many other people, because it didn't get covered.
How do you think the mainstream media did on the story about the large attendance at both Democratic and Republican caucuses?
I don't think that they underreported it.
It was a cold day, if you recall.
It was as cold as today is. And by the way, I mean, I know women in this town that are worried about having extra fur start growing just because of the temperatures. And on that day, there were people parking in not parking spots on sidewalks and running for a mile to get to Baggage School. I don't think that – I know that it was underreported in numbers. Also, we've had the three largest political rallies in this state since September that most people I know who have been here for a while have said to record. I mean, they were the three biggest political rallies, and they were completely underreported. They'd say, oh, 300 people showed up, and I was there. There were, 1,000 people easily at one of those that they think they reported 300. So, I don't think that they've been reported on as well. And when you call it mainstream media, I mean, I have to look at it. It's really corporate media. You know what sells, and who's buying your ads. I mean, and you mentioned at the beginning of the show just how much, the economy is affecting the media right now. When it comes to ADN, their stock has plummeted and they've laid off people. You look at Channel 2, they've, two of their reporters have gone on to have love fests with the governor and are working for her. And I'm waiting for Wesley Loy to get a job with her, frankly. But and then Channel 2 was sold.
Wait, then there wouldn't be anything at all in the Daily News this morning.
I know it.
A Julie O'Malley story, that would be it.
That'd be fine. She's lovely.
Yes, it's wonderful. Well, you know what? There's a pattern to what you're saying that is maybe an underlying issue, one of those things that moves so slowly that it's hard to say what the defining event is that makes it a story. But it is a growing civic engagement, It would appear, that whether it's because of Bush versus Obama or because of the lurches in the economy, or because of, something about the Palin administration.
Or it could be the war. It could be the environment. It could be the lack of jobs. It could be the lack of health care.
That
people are starting to plug in.
That there's a little bit more, that there is an emerging issue here of more civic engagement. And certainly the Obama administration is doing everything it can to egg it on, at least at this point, encouraging people to show up at the inauguration and the health care thing that is going on right now and putting the transition onto the web.
Oh, definitely. And, yeah. and not only that, it's interesting that you say that Obama is encouraging that. I got a call from a friend of mine here in town, and her nephews – I think it was her nephews, 17 and 20, I think she said they are. These two boys were on vacation in Hawaii. They're from Eagle River. They were playing pickup basketball at a public court, and Obama showed up. This truck drives up, and these guys get out and sort of scout around, and then Obama walks over and says, "Can I pick up a game?" And he played basketball in a public court with these guys, and was like, "Oh, great, you're from Alaska." Well, and having conversations with regular people. And just what that is. But I think that people are at, for whatever reason that they've come to the crisis in their existence that doesn't allow them to just ignore what's happening with their country right now. For whatever reasons that is, many people are getting to that point now.
Well, here's one that agrees with you, Amanda. Comments by email at talk@APRN.org. I thought the local Anchorage newspaper missed one of the most important stories of the year in Anchorage. The Alaska women reject Palin rally. this past summer, which I believe you referred to, Shannon, in front of the Lusac Library. They did report on it, but failed miserably to adequately describe or publish photographs of the largest peaceful protest rally in Anchorage's history. Anyone who was there can tell you it was not just a huge event in Anchorage history, but a turning point in Alaska politics and nothing less than the passing of a legacy of peaceful political involvement to a new generation.
And now, and what was remarkable about that rally, it was the first one, it was very, very organic in the sense that there were no founders specifically. I mean, there were, but no one really knew who they were, and word just got around, and people just showed up. And so many of them had never, ever been to any sort of political rally before. And the signs, the creativity that wasn't reported, I mean, there were people there where that had signs that said, if my boss knew I was here, I'd be fired. Now, there's a story. Really, why? Your job? Your job, you'd lose your job? Okay, then why? What is so important that you're here? There's a story there. None of it was really covered, talked about, and, you know, it was sort of sad. I think that another thing that whoever wrote in, Amanda, I think you said, one of the things that happened this year, though, is that the blogs, the political blogs in Alaska took over in a way and picked up stories that had never been picked up and covered them and are still covering them. Why weren't the subpoenas answered? Why do we have an attorney general who should be disbarred by his advice to state workers? You know, and following up these sort of stories that have been completely dropped. It's like, oh, well, Sarah Palin's back. Let's just let it all go. Well, you know, that's not how it's flying there.
Let's go to James, joins the program from Ketchikan. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, James.
Why, thank you.
Hi.
Hi. The question I had was about the story that was not covered enough, I thought, or hasn't been covered enough anyway, is Sarah Palin bypassing the Frank Initiative by moving the Capitol one job at a time. And anyway, I just, you know, like to hear more on that.
Oh, that's excellent. You're so right. And how about 312 days of staying in her own home and charging Alaskans per diem? Over 50% of the time she had been governor, she had charged Alaskans to stay at home. I think the Capitol has been moved, not to Willow, but Wasilla.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you for your time.
Okay, yeah, I think that there has always been a mentality. There's always been a political force to move the Capitol, and there's been various efforts to do so, including
sure.
popular votes. And they go back for years and years. And this is but the latest strategy, but the effectiveness of that strategy is only recently being paid attention to in news stories, it seems.
Sure. It's all been moved to the Atwood Building.
Yeah. Okay, this one comes from BGS. Hey, Steve, great show with Shannon this morning. If you're getting these, my personal pick for at least talked about stories of 08, well, again, the numbers of animals, cats and dogs, but in particular cats that we put down each and every year at the animal control because people simply will not spay and neuter their animals. Responsible pet ownership, that, and the enforcement of Title 17 animal cruelty laws.
You know, it's interesting. There was an animal cruelty bill that was actually created this year. Bill Willikowski wrote it. Basically, it made it illegal, it made it a felony for you to harm an animal. I know, you're like, what? It wasn't before? No, there was a man who had you know, come into this woman's house, an old lover, whatever, and stabbed her dog to death. And it wasn't a felony. And so here he puts together this bill, and it's going through, and it's cruising, and it's going to make it. And the governor's office, at the very last minute, didn't go talk to him, put a rider on his bill that was the aerial wolf hunting bill.
Oh.
Because it had to do with animals. And so you could put it, you know, you have to have something similar, some sort of similar topic. And didn't even tell him. He ended up pulling his bill and putting it on with a crimes bill so that they couldn't do that. But the irony of, okay, now it's against the law to stab a German Shepherd, but now it's okay to shoot a wolf out of a plane. And that's what they did at the very last minute. In fact, he had to go ask them, like, what the ham and cheese are you doing? and you know, spay and neuter your pets.
So this is one of those deals that happens usually in the Rules Committee at the, you know, right towards the end of the session.
It was like at the very end of the session.
All right, let's go to Steve, joins program from Eagle River. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Steve.
Hi. National Public Radio is excellent in its coverage of gay issues. When KSK started up 30 years ago, the charter was diversity mandate was considered to include covering GLBT issues. Shortly after KSK started, they had the press release. Chuck Hagan produced an in-house program, Gay News Review, half hour, or started 15 minutes and then went to a half hour. He was joined in producing it by Nan Hardy. It was continued with Jay Brouse and David McCartney, who was an employee there. When David left, the program was stopped. I think this was about 1987. I don't know if it was because of a lack of person to produce it or a decision not to continue it. Jay Brouse probably could have continued it. The last time I heard an in-house discretionary program produced at KSK that covered anything LGBT-related was 2001, Gil Sanchez had Jane Schlittler of PFLAG on when Wirch banned the Celebrating Diversity Library display. The program AK produced at APRN in 06 mentioned locals who attended the gay games in Chicago. In 07 mentioned the tour group out in Alaska. And in 08 had a piece on a two-mother family in Juneau. On the ballot issue last year, KSK did a call-in program on everything else on the ballot except the advisory vote on removing domestic partnership benefits to families of LGBT public employees. I emailed Nellie Moore to ask when it would be done and received no reply. KKM did cover it in the series running. I spoke to BD Trantina in 1999 about carrying the program this way out. She was afraid of being zeroed out. KM used to carry the program in the life but stopped. There was no reporting on Pride Week or Pride Conference or Gay History Month. There is excellent coverage of Native Black and Latin affairs.
Okay. So it's pretty much of a laundry list that you've given us, but I think I get the basic idea is that you feel that the administration of the local public radio station in Anchorage and public television, for that matter, just simply is not reporting on gay advocacy. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, you know, I think it's interesting that the state of Alaska sued the state of California over their gay marriage. You know, when it became legal, the state of Alaska joined with, I think, 8 other states to sue California. Why would we do that? Because if you remember, we don't want, Congressman Miller passing federal laws about aerial wolf hunting because God knows he's from California. He's some sort of Californicator down there. But Alaska gets to tell them what they can do with their marriage laws. It was just ridiculous. I think you're absolutely right. There are so many issues with you know, not being covered. But it's not just public radio. It's everywhere. And that is an issue not getting picked up.
All right, Steve. Thank you.
Okay.
That's a listener that definitely thinks that public broadcasting is dropping the ball on a significant area of social and cultural.
Well, that advisory vote was absolutely ridiculous.
Okay, let's try.
But that was last year.
Let's try this one here. This one comes from Anonymous? Yeah, I guess so. On by email, and it says, how come nobody's reported on Levi Johnston getting a highly competitive job on the North Slope being a high school dropout? Could it be that he is politically connected?
It could be.
Could be.
If you're gonna breed with politics, you're probably gonna get the better jobs. You know, that's funny. The blogs have reported on this a great deal, but certainly the mainstream media has not.
Yeah. So the whole complex of it is changing. It's just plain changing, I don't think any of us know where it's going. Let's go to Andy, joins program from Girdwood. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Andy.
Yeah, how you doing, Steve?
Pretty good.
We've met before. I lived out in Dillingham for 17 years. I was a criminal defense investigator out there for a lot of years.
There's job security.
Yeah, kind of a thankless job. My comment, kind of the biggest story I think that really hasn't been covered very much this year is the amount of troopers and the amount of trooper misconduct that has gone on and the lack of ramifications for someone when they're the victim of the trooper's misconduct. We had a case.
Well, you ought to see it from your point of view. I guess from your point of view, I guess you would see that. I want you to sit on your example here until we finish with our break. Can you stay with us there, Andy?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
All right, as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from
First National Bank Alaska, working shoulder to shoulder with Alaskan businesses for nearly a century. Member FDIC, equal housing lender.
APRN brings news about Alaska to public radio every weekday. APRN, we cover the stories that impact the lives of all Alaskans.
It's the year-ender edition of Talk of Alaska, and we've got a talk radio host, Shannon Moore, with us, and we're talking about what the neglected stories of 2008 might have been. And we've got Andy on the line, who basically does criminal defense investigation and believes that we're underreporting trooper misconduct. Andy, I'll just get this email response out of the way here. Steve, this is from Ron. Your guest mentioned Governor Palin's non-mention of Baker Exxon in the Katie Couric interview. Could it be that she was coached by her Cheney-esque oil-based handlers not to mention the Exxon decision?
Oh, I'm sure.
That could be. Okay, and now back to you, Andy. You wanted to get more specific about this.
You got Trooper Wooten. He tases his 11-year-old son. You or I, Steve, we tase somebody. That's going to be felony assault, placing another in serious physical injury by means of a dangerous instrument. Nothing ever really criminally comes of that. You have a trooper up in Fairbanks, steals his doctor's prescription pad, writes his own OxyContin prescription. Who knows what he's doing with those pills, what kind of favors he's getting for him.
He could be a talk show host.
He gets six months probation and just can't be a law enforcement officer for those 6 months. But it sounds like the Alaska Police Standards Council is wholly going to let this guy back in.
Well, you know,
so Walt Monaghan was a little perturbed by the ineffectuality of some of this.
You know, it's interesting, though, that Sarah Palin has been in for 2 years now and has never tried to create a board, never tried to revamp or change how we deal with our troopers. And, according
certainly to the Alaska Police Standards Council needs to have a 1-800 no donut program. I mean, they've got a 1-800 turn in a drug dealer program. They need to have a 1-800 no donut program where police misconduct gets investigated by an independent party. Right now, basically, the only ramifications, if a trooper intentionally violates your civil rights on a search and seizure, for instance, basically a little bit of evidence gets suppressed. There is a federal statute, 46 U.S.C. 1983, which prohibits state officers from violating your federal constitutional rights in the pursuance of state law. Those claims are fairly easy to prove, but that you got to sue the individual officers, and they just don't have that deep a pocket. So it really is hard to attract law firms to handle those cases.
Andy, that is absolutely fascinating. Thanks for your call.
Yeah, absolutely. See you, Steve.
All right. Shannon Moore, our guest on Talk of Alaska. Robert up next from Anchorage. Robert, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Hello, Steve. Hello, Shannon. Look, the I've got a story that maybe is unreported rather than underreported, and it's a shame because it's a feel-good story. And it has to do with the aftermath of the Woody and Wilcox radio defamation of Alaska Native women.
When Michelle decided she'd had enough of it, she said she put her foot down and insisted something be done about it, and pretty soon a Native corporation got involved, and it was affecting the advertising, and all of a sudden they got sensitivity training. Yes, go ahead. You say to your mind, there was a happy outcome when you listen to Woody and Wilcox. Now you you get that impression?
No, I don't listen to Woody and Wilcox.
Oh, okay.
But I had a sort of a sideline view of the what you're calling sensitivity training, which essentially was education. And not only the two shock jocks, but the whole staff of the Clear Radio offices in Anchorage, including the manager, and they have, I think, something like five stations in Anchorage, not just the one that these guys are on. They all went to the Alaska Native Heritage Center for biweekly seminars, educating them on Alaska Native history and Alaska history and issues. And some Alaska Native people took the time and trouble to come and sit in on these sessions and to open up about their experiences as Alaska Natives.
So,
and it had a transformative effect, according to reports.
Hey, Robert, can I ask you a quick question? Did you know the names Woody and Wilcox before the event?
No, I didn't.
Okay, that was the feel-good story. Nobody knew who they were. They were one of the lowest rated. And even though you don't listen to them, you know who they are. And let me tell you, they couldn't have spent money to get you to know their names the way that they could with this outrage. And even though, you know, even though you're having this feel-good about it, they feel really good that you know who they are. That's the whole...
You're reporting your story. I'd prefer to report mine.
Yeah.
At the end of that time, there were tears. There were protestations of those who'd grown up in Alaska that they hadn't known anything about Alaska history or hadn't known the things that they were informed about in this... seminar, and promises to be allies with Alaska Natives henceforth, and even if part of that is bull bleep, there really was growth on the part, not just of these two guys who probably be off to Phoenix next month, but the whole organization. And I think the moral of that story is that you need something deeper than sensitivity training, and you certainly don't need just putting people down and firing a few figureheads, but you need to educate, and you need to communicate, and you need to get people in touch with groups that they have been stereotyping and making jokes about.
Robert, I think
when you do that, real change occurs.
I think you are absolutely right about that. I'm completely on record publicly as saying that our big challenge in the next 50 years of statehood will be in the area of cross-cultural communication and really making it mean something. There are positive steps going in that direction. I think you see the universities putting some money into a really meaningful dialogue. I think you see the Native interpretation of statehood, which really has some real teeth in it. And I think it's really beginning to happen. And I think you were... It's true. This is a major issue that you just pointed out that we are hardly reporting on at all.
And you look at it and you go, wow, look how much sensitivity training went for a couple of shock jocks, morning shock jocks, and all the outrage. But we've had another underreported story when Amnesty International comes in and does a 5-year study on the amount of women being raped in this state and the disproportionate amount of them being Native, and the disproportionate amount of them even happening in downtown Anchorage, and yet we're not having that sort of sensitivity training. We're not talking about, look, you have a better chance of getting raped as a Native woman in this state than you do of, I don't know, winning the Iditarod. Or anything else, frankly. I mean,
Shannon,
it's really it's really high.
Let me tell you one more thing. I was at a workshop for a group I'm involved in, Healing Racism in Anchorage, and when people let their hair down, every woman of color in the room confided that she had been the victim of an assault, a rape, something like that, and not the white women. But the women of color, and they're much more at risk, much more vulnerable, much more under attack from sexual assault than women generally.
Robert, thank you. Thank you very much. Okay. For stepping up with that one. We're, our subject is the neglected news of 2008, and boy, there seems to be a lot of it. This one comes from Kasilov by email at talk@APRN.org, and the listener says, I couldn't agree more. The state media is not vetting Palin. Among other things, even national media missed how she is shorting the Bush, and the example mm-hmm. here is cutting the pumpkin run. It's kind of a symbol of the ferry system reductions that have taken place. And so even the pumpkin run was canceled.
Well, even the energy rebate. Everybody got the $1,200 energy rebate. Well, you know, the president of ConocoPhillips, Jim Bowles, he got the same $1,200 as, you know, someone who lives, you know, in Ruby, who's paying $9 for a gallon of heating fuel.
Well, now you're in a constitutional issue. I remember having Ron Zobel on, and
I know.
Well, we went round and round
about
that one.
There's ways to take care of that, though.
Let's go to Tom, joins the program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Tom.
Hi there. How are you today?
Very good.
Okay, I've got one. Politicians won't touch it. Reporters really only cover the Drug Enforcement Administration's party line, but there are 500,000 people in jail, more going to jail all the time, and millions that have been put in jail for what might be best called America's answer to the Inquisition, and that's the war on drugs. You know, to my mind, this is probably about as religious a law as banning certain sexual acts, and yet the media won't cover it. You'd think Shotgun Dix W would have done something because he'd had such extensive experience with certain drugs. I don't think he could handle pot, but you know, he didn't like that. But he never had to go to jail. Why didn't he change this thing that has a heritage of only a little over a century? Why doesn't the media cover it? Why do our efforts to pass initiatives get subverted by organizations like the DEA? When Bennett came up here and shot down one of the marijuana initiatives.
Yeah, the whys are very big on this one. I do recall when the Archdiocese got involved in criminalizing marijuana in Alaska. Frank Murkowski and his entire family got involved. There was this organization was set up down in Ketchikan as a front organization. And I remember that very well. I think why is a very big question here.
I think why is pretty easy, though, because there's not a big group of pot lobbyists because they're all home eating chips. but there's a whole lot of pharmaceutical lobbyists. Like,
yeah,
I don't know, about four.
A lot of interests that like to maintain the current status quo, from the drug testers to the cartels, from the prosecutors and prison guards to the DEA agents that get to take all the property they seize. And I'm not just talking about marijuana here.
Right,
talking about the whole structure of making things that people would use to self-medicate, which may be foolishness on its the first order to be your own doctor, but the right of the American adult to self-medicate should trump this a phoniness of doing oneself harm. I mean, the idea that getting high and then going to work sober the next day deserves a felony indictment, imprisonment, and the ruining of one's life. It seems that the illegality is what's ruining lives, not the drug use.
I think what actually really drove that, I mean, you can bring up the church, you can bring up the Murkowskis, but the truth of it is, as soon as you start profitizing and making justice a for-profit industry. When you look at the prison industries, you look at Tom Anderson is sitting in jail right now from taking a bribe to build more prisons. I mean, it is one of the fastest growing industries in this country. So there's no interest in you know, creating less laws and less felons when you can make a lot of money off of it.
DuPont and other large chemical companies went out of their way to make these things illegal. They never minded that their own kids might go to jail. What they were looking at was their business bottom line, that their products needed to have things like hemp clothing out of the way. And putting people in jail to get rid of this ubiquitous plant was useful. The fact that heroin is one of the most powerful painkillers known to man, there is something else, it's a mixture of things, is ignored. I mean, the name heroin is a German word for hero because it, A, cured morphine addiction. It also wiped out all pain. Well, now we've got OxyContin issues, as you mentioned earlier in the show, with policemen apparently dispensing them with
not all of them. Come on.
Granddaughters of
we're going to start pulling over cops. I need some OxyContin. Yeah.
Hey, Tom.
Anyway, I'll let go.
Okay, yeah. Thank you very much. It's a fascinating topic and obviously a great one for talk radio. And we clearly, the three of us, could have gone on about this for some great length. Joe sent in an email talking about saying the government Palin turned down something to the tune of $285 million from the federal economic stimulus package. I did not hear about this.
What is he talking? Is that the thanks but no thanks on the bridge to nowhere? Because she actually did keep that money.
Yeah. She could. It was an earmark. She didn't have any choice about it. No, this goes on to say, ask the folks in the Seward area what they think of it. They have bridges on 55-mile-an-hour highways that have been reduced to single-lane 20-mile-per-hour limits due to their poor condition. Why no coverage of this? Well, I have to confess, Joe, that I don't understand it well enough to cover it, but it certainly could be a story if there's money Alaska could have gotten that it didn't get.
For infrastructure, well, that was just part of the thanks but no thanks in being a maverick. Yeah. How mavericky is it to have to drive 20 miles an hour over a bridge and hope to God it doesn't fall in? That's mavericky.
That's almost as good as a cattle guard. As Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from Tell Alaska, encouraging listeners to tune to AK every weekend. Check your local public radio station for airtimes. Tell Alaska on the web at tellalaska.com. Award-winning news to get you out of bed in the morning. The Alaska Morning News and the Alaska Economic Report bring you the information you need for the day.
Well, Mark sent an email saying, you know, the national media has not really covered enough the death of Michael Connell in a plane crash. He was the technology guy for Karl Rove, and suddenly he dies right when his evidence becomes very important.
I think it was the day after he was subpoenaed, 2 days after he was subpoenaed. Yeah, he actually was the one that set up the sort of dummy email system, the one that, you know, suddenly they couldn't find 5 million emails that the White House was using. He also was the guru behind all the computer stuff in Ohio during the 2004 election.
Yep.
Here he gets subpoenaed. He's ready to talk. He was also a huge source to several different media outlets and is catching them up and letting them know what really happened. Yep, suddenly gone.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you for that one.
Paul Wellstoned.
Yeah. Whoa. A verb, huh? Let's go now to Bethel and Nick. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Nick.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a I think I may have heard before, isn't Alaska rated the world's largest development of natural resources?
I'm not sure.
And the other thing, the other question I have is the villages here in Alaska are experiencing, extreme, poverty or something.
Yes.
And they're in migration, migrating into urban areas. And Do you honestly think if the villages are experiencing exploitation or not having the right to govern their own villages?
Well, I don't think there's too much doubt of that.
Yeah, and I'm going to quickly read this. The sovereignty, a coin in the United Kingdom containing 113 grains of fine gold, supreme excellence or an example of it, supreme power, especially over body politic, freedom from external control, and an autonomous state, and autonomous having the right to having the right or power of self-governing, especially the right of self-government, self-directing, especially moral independence.
Yeah, Nick, I think this issue does not go away. The whole time I've been in Alaska, mm-hmm. it has not gone away. Yeah. And I don't see how it can go away. The right to self-determination is kind of a human right.
Yeah, and because they've been mining gold for probably over a century now. And uh-huh. I think I've heard before, too, the largest gold mining is here in Alaska, comparing to the world. And
in the United States, that could be. Yeah, Nick, thank you, yeah. thank you for your call. I think we got the gist of what you were after, which is that it takes local control to get effective development of the natural resources, not just done from outside, right?
Yeah, and one thing I just recently heard about the Catholic, you know, all that scandal with sexual abuse,
yes,
the Catholic priests and stuff. And now they're going to be, I think they're going to be trying to explore geothermal up in the interior.
Yes, indeed.
And I think, don't the Catholics originate over in Vatican in Rome?
Specifically, yes.
I'm wondering if doing that way would be exploiting, trying to explore geothermal here in Alaska, and that, you know, the Alaska may, you know, is the world's largest development of petroleum, and petroleum generates from the upper strata of the earth, and Alaska is the most part of it, I believe. And we're still experiencing, you know, very dire need of self-governing.
All right. Thank you, Nick.
Go ahead, Shannon. It's interesting. A couple of things he said. Certainly, the villages, many villages, are fourth world, meaning third world within a first world country. And the poverty issue, you're right. It hasn't gone away. And so many people say the solution is, hey, you know what? Move to town. Well, that's not really a solution. But one of the things he brought up was, you know, the fact that we're being charged more for fuel. Right now, it's cheaper for Japan to buy natural gas from Cook Inlet than it is for Instar to buy it. And why isn't that considered racketeering? Why is it that the lower 48 is easily a dollar less for a gallon of gas? I know you ride a bike. You don't care. But this is kind of a biggie. Just trying to figure out why is it we're always getting the short end of the stick on energy prices?
Well, Shannon, I will say that the Regulatory Commission of Alaska is one of our most undercovered agencies.
Yes,
you know,
it
and
is.
They're trying to thread their way through all of this, but it's extremely difficult. In a lot of ways, we are such a small state government-wise that we simply don't have the apparatus to properly regulate this industry.
But for some reason, the Alaska Board of Game is completely covered. And, you know, you look at Fish and Game, you look at some of the other agencies, DNR is pretty heavily gauged. So I think it's a priority issue of whoever's in charge.
Well, I think Leo in Montana might agree with you. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Leo.
Good morning, Steve. How are you doing?
Pretty good.
I don't know if Shannon remembers me or not, but Governor Knowles appointed me to the Board of Game and to the McGrath Adaptive Management Team to look at the moose population around McGrath before all this aerial wolf hunting started or not.
Right. It turned out that they did a substantial amount of predator control around there. As I recall, what the science said was that, well, they're there, but they're just not around the rivers where people can get to.
Yeah, the final report that our team received from Pat Valkenburg, the regional research biologist, said that there was three times as many moose as the people were talking about, that the moose population was increasing, and that overhunting was one of the problems. Unfortunately, right after that, Governor Knowles left office and Murkowski came in and turned the Board of Game upside down with all of his radical appointments. But my question to Shannon is she aware of is the suppression of fish and game information that does not support wolf control, is that suppression still continuing?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And you look at, and not only that, but another underreported story of this year were several laws that were tried to pass. One of them was that our wildlife would be considered an asset, and so it would not be – basically, they tried to change it so you couldn't have any ballot initiatives concerning wildlife. There's that, just trying to suppress public opinion. But, yeah, there still is. And you look at the Board of Game now, and it's all sort of these Viagra-deprived something's going to grow if you shoot a mammal type mentality. And it's not really, and I believe me, I'm a hunter. I have no problem killing and grilling. But when you're looking at this sort of mismanagement and you're looking at this real prejudice that people go into the Board of Game with, and it's a lot of people from the Alaska Outdoor Council and Ron Arnold and this sort of payback from Sarah Palin, as well as
Arnold. Arno. I know him well. Hey, yeah. Leo, thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much, Steve.
Yeah, he's right. This is very underreported.
Yeah.
This is, you know, how Alaska, part of what's so great about Alaska are just all the opportunities for experiencing wildlife, whether you're hunting or fishing or camping or running away from something that wants to bite you. I mean, that's part of what's wild about Alaska. And for some reason, letting nature go wild is just out of the question.
Well, I'll tell you, the cold is biting all of us. Here's one, comes from Martha by email saying, here's an underreported story. 35 articles of impeachment read over 5 hours by Dennis Kucinich. Actually, Shannon, I think you did cover that on talk radio, didn't you?
I did cover it. Dennis Kucinich spent 5 hours reading in articles of impeachment against the president, and it was like crickets on every part of corporate media didn't cover it. And in fact, I had Dennis Kucinich on the show.
That's what I was thinking.
And it was a hoot. Initially, when he came on, he said he could be on for 5 minutes. And then he said, when we were having this great discussion, he says, can you hang on a minute? I've got to go vote on the floor. I'll be right back. And he puts the phone down. And I'm like, here I am on live radio saying, okay, we're on hold right now.
Yeah.
With the congressman, he's got a vote, and he came back, and he loves Alaska.
I'm going to have you back sometime. You know, I think we need to explore this issue of our changing media landscape at some point. The importance of bloggers nowadays,
huge,
and just the way that people are getting their information is, we kind of need to be a little bit more activist about
just the fact that they even want information is a change.
Well, it is, and you know, you can get information that only backs your own suspicions, as we've seen already, entirely too much. Shannon Moore, thank you for
being
with us.
Thank you, Steve.
Willie Hensley will be our guest next week. Dave Waldron on the controls today. Duck and Moon's our managing editor. Annie Flight and Lynn Anderson on the phones. I'm Steve Heimel. Thanks for listening.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by
BP Alaska. BP is focused on the future, getting more oil out of Prudhoe Bay and bringing Alaska's gas to North America.
And by
the Rasmussen Foundation, partnering with Alaska's nonprofits and people to improve the quality of life throughout our state. Learn more at rasmussen.org.
Working late? Hear Alaska News nightly at any time of the day on the web at www.aprn.org. Views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at aprn.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.